Greetings and masturbations.
Did that already.
Good. I wouldn't want you doing this stressed.
Hmm. I've also eaten, so I've got a full stomach.
Would the two incidents related?
Look, all I'm going to say is sour cream.
Nachos.
Podcasts, The Final Frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Blah, 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 you're a big sack of shit.
Hey, Mickey.
Nasha Troy does sound tempting.
Scott.
See how it opens in front of me, then closes as soon as I leave? How convenient. Bye-bye. Sook.
And Fort Max.
I think there's a douchebag in here.
So this week on that one episode of Star Trek, it's the 6th anniversary of Superhero Time. And
woo!
We're technically doing a different show now, so I'm not really even sure how that works.
But the heart of rock and roll is still beaten, so.
I mean, it's still some of the same people doing it. Like, Fort Max isn't here this week because of family problems, but, family problems make it sound worse than it is. Just family obligations, how about that? So Fort Max isn't here, but me and Mickey were at least a carry-through from the original crew that started in 2010. Jeez.
Fuck almighty.
You know, it's times
you know
like
how old I was then?
6 years younger than you are now?
I was 30. I was young and full of life.
You were 30 when we started doing this?
Yep.
I'm 30 now.
Tim Curry.
I was young, dumb, and full of cum. Let's just be honest.
Was. I'll have you know I'm still dumb.
Well, we can pretend that this TNG episode is kind of a sentai.
I can't use that as a quote now because you used my real name.
And actually, I'm making a note actually to go and paste over your real name.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I'm going to get one of Paladin's Tim Curry's and put it there instead.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that as soon as I realized what he said.
Sorry.
You stupid bastard.
I know. It's extremely unprofessional of me.
Oh, yes.
Well, it is. I'm very, very disappointed.
Yeah, Scott Kelly from Sacramento, California.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't give a shit. Nobody cares who I am.
No, but that's for those true. Few seconds, that was a beautiful joke.
Indeed.
Okay, so this week we're watching Next Generation.
Which
and,
is kind of like Sentai, because they wear like colored uniforms. They all work on a team, right?
And for the first couple of years, the uniforms were made of spandex.
Mm. Riker knows karate. Just watch the end of Nemesis.
Ugh.
Or watch that season 2 episode with his dad. When they did karate in the gym.
In their bathrobes.
No. When they were wearing the BMX stuff and the masks they couldn't see through.
Oh, I think I remember that.
The glowing sticks.
Oh, boy. Video.
That was such a terrible episode.
Maybe we should watch it soon.
And it had John Tesh as a Klingon.
Have you seen John Tesh's forehead? He kind of already is a Klingon.
Give you the arch Klingon.
Well, he certainly got room to put the ridges on, yeah.
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 Whoever has the most head ridges gets to lead the Klingons.
Is this like Dynaman logic?
Yes, it is.
USA Network, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, God.
Which is essentially what it is anyway, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between USA and UPN, exactly? Besides, like, two letters.
Yeah.
Very similar.
One has much more silk stockings.
So that is that what they're wearing underneath their uniforms? Because
have you seen the like? Remember the episode where Picard's in the dress uniform for the first time, and everybody's complimenting him on his legs because he's wearing tights.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
That was also a season two episode, I believe.
Season two is kind of a gold mine, isn't it?
It really is.
It is because, like, you know, the writer's strike was going on that year. So they were fishing out a lot of old, unused scripts. And just kind of, like, do some copy and replace on this, or find and replace. Yeah, copy and replace, that makes total sense. Just change the names, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Just turn 360 degrees around and walk away.
Yes. I prefer to turn 280 degrees, personally.
Well, two wrongs don't make a right, but three left do.
Oh!
Yep, couldn't stop me.
I knew you were going there.
caused him physical pain on that one.
You know, it's a shame there's never going to be a context to have Scott and Paladin on a podcast together.
Maybe
so we can find something they both enjoy, but Paladin doesn't enjoy anything.
Uh-huh. I think it'd be more like we have to find something Scott enjoys and something Paladin is willing to talk about.
Hmm.
How many times Paladin's going to see Transformers 5?
Well, now that we know Michael Bay's back on board.
So wait, so they're really doing a Transformers 5?
Yeah.
And is it really like the Rise of Unicorn?
No.
No? Okay. Because I've been seeing all kinds of, like, funny images last couple days online. And, yeah, people are making jokes it's going to be Rise of Unicorn.
If anything, it's going to be Optimus Prime murdering every human being on Earth.
Stomp them until he's knee-deep in pink slime.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
At this point, basically anything you hear about Transformers 5 other than that it's the fifth movie and Michael Bay's directing it is not true.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one more thing you can say. It's going to be fucking terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I really can't get over the fact that, because, I mean, I love Transformers 2. I mean, I'm not nearly as knowledgeable about it as you guys are, or talk about it nearly as much, and I don't know all the details and stuff and all the different generations, etc.
You're not a true fan.
I know, I'm not a true fan, but I still grew up with it. Gen 1 is still, like, my thing. I still love it. I still love the stuff. I mean, Optimus Prime is still a Jesus figure to me. I mean, you know. And it still pains me that somebody went in and fucked up our childhood that badly. They said, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't be upset. They can't go back and destroy your memories. But it can affect them. It can color them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is bothersome when, like, something you love gets totally shit upon. I don't care.
Into darkness.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. Oh, I'm sure you guys have seen the preview. Yeah, we all talked about that. The previews for the new Star Trek. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious meets Star Trek. Whoa. Fuck you. Gotta go fast.
That's Sonic.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's how shitty this is. It might as well be like a... they're doing to Star Trek what happened to the Sonic series.
It had more than three games?
Oh, Sonic had a lot more games.
I know, but it stopped being good after Sonic and Knuckles.
Exactly. Star Trek stopped being good after, well, when did Star Trek stop being good? It was sometime after season 4, episode 12, though.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, are you talking like just in terms of the movies or?
Just anything, just Star Trek.
Stopped being good after Deep Space Nine.
Okay, all right, that's where we're drawing the line.
It stopped being good before Deep Space Nine when Voyager started, though.
But Deep Space Nine was still on, so it was still good at that point.
Yeah, XV's got a point.
Now, to be fair, I enjoyed Enterprise, too, but, like, it's no Deep Space Nine.
Right.
And, you know,
Enterprise was apparently so bad that it gave us the J.J. Abrams universe.
Yeah, we needed the J.J.-verse to cleanse our palate from it.
That's how bad Enterprise really was.
Yeah, that's like eating a licorice candy to, like, you know, get your taste out of your mouth of something else. That's how bad that first thing must have been.
It's like, oh, this pie's gone rancid. I better eat some Mary Jane's.
Oh, so you're reading from Bot Cobb's Twitter?
Yes.
Which will make no sense since that's the first mention of Bot Cobb on this show. Anyway, yes, yeah, so we're watching The Wounded, which, as Scott pointed out, was somewhere in season 4 of Next Generation.
Yeah, Netflix says it's episode 12, but as we've learned, Netflix is a dirty, dirty whore of a liar.
No, that's probably right.
It's certainly episode 12 within the Netflix listing, so...
Yes. By someone's math, it is episode 12.
Well, you guys just want to...
But my
just
math is, because I count down 12 episodes and there it is.
I mean, math is such a flexible thing that just, you know, you can interpret it to have any meaning that you want it to.
And that's why MathNet is there, is to interpret that meaning for you.
Right. Now, we can't make MathNet jokes unless Fort Max is here.
I know, but we have to make her sound, you know, or feel left out.
Oh. But she's probably having a bad enough time as it is.
But making her feel left out's a lot of fun.
I mean, she's with her family.
See, that sounds ominous when you put it that way. Oh, she's with her family now. You make it sound really ominous.
With her family, sleeping with the fishes.
Right.
Well, Scott, do you enjoy spending time with your family?
I need to remind you, I moved across the entire continent to get away from them.
Right, so I think you get my point.
Yeah, but I'm not going to... I'd rather do the podcast. Yeah, well, that was collateral damage. See, I would rather do the podcast than spend time with the family. So that's why I'm sitting here.
Yeah, I don't think Fort Max really had a choice. My interpretation is Fort Max didn't really have a choice in it.
Well, hey, Mickey, I'm a sad, sad little man, but you know that.
Let's go out for a mint.
Hey, cut it out. All right. So
let's eventually talk about Star Trek.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we've had our requisite Freakazoid reference, so I think it's time.
To talk about Pokemon? Okay.
Right. So, no, let's talk about Freakazoid for a second, because how come they haven't redone Freakazoid? Because they made Freakazoid like 3 years after the internet was invented, and they made an internet-based superhero. How come it's 2016 and we still don't have another Freakazoid?
The thing is, if they tried to do Freakazoid again, it would be completely ruined.
Well...
Like, the only reason Freakazoid could work in the first place is because nobody understood what the internet was back then.
Oh, we had a good idea that it was mainly porn.
But besides that...
It always confused me how Freakazoid didn't have, like, you know, a crotch cut out in his little leotard there, because, I mean, there's a lot of porn on the internet, even back then. I mean, if he's like the totality, he's like the internet personified into a being, he'd be very porny.
The least believable thing about Freakazoid is he got his powers instantly in the 90s.
Oh,
no, his powers are downloaded one line at a time.
Yeah. And if Freakazoid was made now, he'd be mostly full of cats.
Right.
His powers would have a cap on them.
Yep. Yeah, and the government will know every single thing that he's doing. All the time.
Freakazoid would be really depressing now.
Yeah.
It kind of would.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not getting another Freakazoid series.
It would just say the same memes over and over again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just like the internet.
Yeah, or me.
Yeah, whatever.
The Wounded.
Yes. I think that means you're driving.
Yep.
All right, then. The Enterprise is cruising around through space, and Picard's waxing on about Cardassians, talking about this long, bitter war the Federation had with the Cardassians that, you know, killed off everybody on both sides twice over. And I'm sitting here wondering, what the fuck is this war you're talking about? I've never even heard of these aliens before.
Exactly. That's just it. They talk about like this great war they've had with them, and this is the first time we've heard of them at all. Kind of loses its impact.
And, like, Picard's great story about his time in the Cardassian War was when he was on the Stargazer. Which makes me think they might be exaggerating how recent this was. Like, this probably happened when Picard still had hair.
Well, was he captain of the Stargazer right before he took command of the Enterprise?
We ought to know if there's, like, you know, he's walked off one ship and onto the other one. There might have been, like, a few weeks or months in between.
Weeks or months, but that's not, like, years or anything. Because keep in mind, he when the first episode of TNG was him. That was his first day on command of the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. He was brand new.
And at some point in between, he did get court-martialed. Because he lost his ship.
Whoops.
What, like in a parking lot? I mean, did he not put the little dealy bob on the antenna so he could find it?
He gave it to the Ferengi, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Well, gave. I mean, they kind of carjacked him. I mean, that's why you keep your windows rolled up and your doors locked when you pull up to a red light. God. Because otherwise, you know, a little peck of Ferengi is going to roll up on you and just pull you out of the car so they can take it and strip it down for parts.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Ferengis versus Jawas.
I think the Ferengis have a height advantage on them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's probably more Jawas.
Yeah, probably so.
They breed like rats. All right, so what the hell's going on?
Let's see. Well, nothing's really going on there. But over here in O'Brien's quarters, Keiko prepared a lovely breakfast for him.
Oh, this is so fascinating, everybody. Let's really watch intently this scene. This is amazing stuff.
She's feeding him fish garbage. She scooped up the aquarium and put it on a plate in front of him and handed him a spork.
A plastic spork.
And Bron's response is, "What, you really ate this stuff for breakfast?
You know, in the back
eggs,
of his mind,
no potatoes, no whiskey,
corned beef and cabbage. Jesus Christ, woman, what's wrong with you?"
Well, to be fair, he said corned beef and eggs, which I think sounds delicious because it doesn't have any cabbage in it. Yeah. I mean, they'll still provide.
Yeah, he didn't say potatoes because they didn't have potatoes growing up.
I can't help but think, though, he's in there eating all this fishy stuff, and in the back of his mind, he's thinking, this explains the smell.
Oh, like he's ever gone there.
Oh,
he's Irish. That means he's Catholic. There's a sheet in between them with a hole cut out. Or so I've been told.
Right, or yeah. Which is different from you, which is normally there's a wall between you with a hole cut in it, you know.
Oh, well played. Like
a bathroom stall wall, you know. Good night, everybody.
So Brian's telling her about this long story about how his mom used to cook food for him, and Keiko is just revolted. She cooked.
She touched meat, and it wasn't until much later that O'Brien realized the implication of Keiko's revulsion to the idea of touching meat.
So that's why she never eats me cabbage. Whoa. That's why she never has the old corned beef. Of course, he's Irish, not Scottish, so I don't know why I'm doing the Scottish voice.
Well, that's the only voice you can do, isn't it?
I think so. I think that's about it. Actually, that's my natural voice. What I'm speaking in now is my accent that I had to try very hard to maintain.
I see.
It's a sustained effect.
Right. It takes a lot of effort.
So, well, O'Brien is promising to make her a wonderful home-cooked, replicated Irish garbage meal.
Well, Irish garbage has to be better than fish garbage, right?
I would think so.
I mean, thankfully, Keiko is saved by the bell as the Enterprise is being shot up by a Cardassian Galar-class warship.
And, you know, nobody on the bridge seems very concerned about this.
No, I mean...
Because apparently Galar-class warships are about as effective in battle as, say, a runabout.
Yeah, that's the impression that I got. It was like, oh, well, they did a direct hit on us when we had no shields up, minor damage, no casualties. I mean, seriously, no one even bruised their arm.
I can see how the Federation had such a hard time beating the Cardassians throughout that war.
Yeah, and why they were such a big deal during DS9.
Well, like, you could say this episode kind of serves to set that part up more.
You could say that, but really, this is all getting heavily retconned.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because somehow, yeah, the Cardassians went from being kind of this lonely, low-level kind of alien to like, holy crap, this is an empire.
Yes, because, like, in the introduction of the episode, it makes it sound like the Cardassians only control a few sectors.
Right.
That's not a whole lot when you get down to it.
No.
But bloody war.
Yeah.
This story has some real identity issues about what the hell it's trying to tell us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, part of the problem is going to be the Cardassians were probably only meant as a one-off at that point.
But hey, speaking of identity issues, up on the view screen, it's Gull Do Not.
Would you believe that a novel later or something established that that's actually Gul Dukat's cousin that nobody likes to talk about?
Why? Why make it his cousin? Why? I mean, like humans, there are billions of Cardassians. Why do that?
It would be a lot more fun if that novel established that really was Gul Dukat, but he had, like, spy surgery done so he could disguise himself to investigate the Enterprise.
And by spy surgery, you mean have a fake beard attached?
Yes.
Wait, so this is the evil version of Gul Dukat? Oh, no.
Which would actually make it the good version of Dukat?
Exactly.
But doesn't it look like a more Gul Dukat thing to do to disguise yourself?
Well, no, the Gul Dukat thing to do to disguise yourself would be to impersonate a Bajoran.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Well, I watched that string of episodes just recently, so...
Mm. You watch Star Trek, you know.
So aside from Mark Alamo wonderfully joining this episode, what the hell is he wearing?
Oh, I know this. It's,
Wait, it has an answer? I thought it was rhetorical.
They skin some old 70s couches and just wrap them around the guest stars.
Well, I thought they were endangered back in the 90s. I mean, just the roaming bands of 70s couches, they actually caught them and skinned them?
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were, like, on, like, you know, reservations and stuff.
No, they got them from Canada.
Okay. Yeah, there's way too many of them up in Canada still.
Like, you know, they still have to smuggle it across the border, because it's illegal, it's illegal to, you know, transport that across the line, but...
Well, you get on a young, feisty love seat, you can ride those fuckers for miles.
Oh. As thrilling as this couch discussion is. So, Gull...
Admiral, no you didn't.
Whatever the hell his name is.
Masset.
Doucette, thank you.
Masset.
Whatever. Gull Duvet. Picard asks him, hey, what the hell? Treaty.
He's why Gull Duvet.
We're back to couches.
God damn it. God damn it.
Yes, go to slipcover speed.
Okay, Picard's like, what the fuck?
Right.
And the Gull is like, hey, the ship started firing at us first, so we're just attacking the enemy now. And Picard's like, whoa, hold up, what the fuck? No, what? Fuck? What the fuck? And then the Gull's like, no, really, this ship attacked these people over here. And Picard's like, what the fuck?
Okay, listen.
Let
me call home and see if they know anything about this, because otherwise I'm just going to keep shooting you and you're going to die. And then, you know, Gul Dukat thinks about this for a minute to think, you know, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I could die needlessly or I could listen to you and give you an hour. Gosh, being captain's hard.
But only an hour.
Yeah, and then I'll kill me.
No, like, there's definitely some misbalanced tension here.
Yeah, considering how they, like I said, they took a direct hit with their shields down. They're like, meh, it scratched the paint.
Oh, Gul Dukat, can you send over your insurance information while you're at it?
So, Picard heads to his ready room and calls up Admiral Vel Johnson.
Come on, Mickey, that's a little racist.
But he's a chubby, bald, black guy with a mustache. That's an officer.
That guy has spent way too much time behind a desk, too, by the way. Holy cow.
Well, you have to imagine all admirals look like that after a while.
Yeah, I mean, look, that chair that he's sitting on is a normal-sized chair. He's just that wide.
Honestly, it's kind of a wonder that, like, all Starfleet officers don't look that way, since the majority of the time they are just sitting in chairs.
And they have a replicator within arm's reach. I know I'd be a fat motherfucker if I had a replicator right there. I could just go, computer, give me another ice cream sundae. Just transport it into my mouth.
But they give you Syntha ice cream. It has half the flavor, but none of the calories.
Right, because I don't believe in dairy anymore. it's gluten-free. So futuristic.
You have to imagine that in the 24th century, like, so much of the human population is lactose intolerant. Just no exposure.
The 24th century, the human race is very tolerant.
Except to lactose.
Now, they tolerate everything. Even retarded ideas, like inviting the Cardassians aboard the ship.
Well, it's orders. What are you going to do? I know. We'll assign an armed escort to them at all times, Worf.
Oh, no, we're not going to do that. But, you know, maybe lock the doors to the weapon cabinets. Maybe.
It's like, then it's basically the hide the good silverware. Your aunt's coming over. Hide all the liquor bottles. You know how she gets. Take all the embarrassing stuff out of the medicine cabinets in the bathroom.
And Troy, you know, most of the crew hates Cardassians, so keep an eye on them and see if anybody hates Cardassians. What?
Give me constant updates on the level of unease. I mean, I'm talking like scale 1 to 10. I'm not like a 1 to 5. I'm talking like a 5-star system. I want 1 to 10, like hotness.
And you can almost read the expression on Troy's face is like, what? Okay.
I like the wording of the order, too. Stay close to the crew. You know, all 1,000 of them.
Yeah. Under them if you have to be.
Stay close to every single one of them.
Well, look, guys, I have to say, I think that the Cardassians look pretty fucking badass. I know it may kind of be goofy, the thing in their head, but I think they look pretty fucking badass.
No, I think their costumes look pretty cheap.
Really?
It's like, we need something quick. What can we mold rubber into? Look at some garbage cans we can cut in half.
I think it looks cool. It looks like armor. It looks like battle armor.
It looks like rubber. Like, it looks like they've painted heavy latex paint over a garbage can. It looks awful. However...
And like
their prosthetics look badass.
Oh yeah, the prosthetics look really good, especially in HD.
Oh yeah,
because those prosthetics are super detailed, which is something that never comes across in the original broadcast.
Also, so, I like go ahead.
The second that Mark Alamo steps on set, you can immediately he oozes charisma with his first step. It's amazing. Yep.
I would like to point out, too, that these Cardies must have been spent some time on Risa, because they are tanned and beautiful.
There's one shot later in the episode where one of them looks like he is a horrible burn victim.
He's like a piece of bacon.
Like, there's some inconsistent, like, lighting and color correction going on with these shots that's making them all look different colors at different points in the episode.
Yeah, because now they're in the ready room. They look tanned and a bit pinky.
Well, the last interesting thing in the transporter room scene is as the Cardassians leave, O'Brien shoots them a dirty stare, and Troy looks back going, huh? Is there something wrong with O'Brien and Cardassians? I better not worry about it or mention it to anyone. Bye.
Why would anybody dislike a member of a species we've been at war with?
Mm-hmm. Even though the captain told me to watch out for people having weird, nasty thoughts about Cardassians, I'm not going to report this to anyone.
Oh, it's just O'Brien. What can he do? He's in the transporter room.
He's probably thinking about potatoes.
Look, as an Irishman, you're probably right.
So in the ready room now.
Or okay. The conference room?
whatever. Conference room, yes.
Yeah.
That's Scott's fault, though.
Yeah.
What? No. No! Look, I've already got one demerit this episode. I don't need another one.
So, the senior staff is busy putting on a big show for the Cardassians of, look, this is what we're doing to find them. We're scanning this way. Isn't that amazing? We're letting you know everything we're doing right up front. That's so upfront and honest.
Because we're the Federation.
And the Cardassians just like shifting his eyes like, what are you not telling me? Because they're smart. But realize the Federation is so stupid, they actually are telling them everything. Right.
And like, I just love the grin Riker has when Picard starts explaining, this is how awesome we are and upfront we're being with you.
And the Gull's just like, you guys are stupid.
Of course, Gull's thinking, if I'd only grown the rest of my beard, I could stroke it evilly, but I can't.
Now, one of my favorite parts of this scene here is all of a sudden the camera pans back and the entire crew of both sides turns to look at O'Brien. What do you have to say about the situation?
Of course, he's like, I'm just the engineer, man. Yeah, it's like...
I do like the delayed reveal of O'Brien in the conference room. It's kind of neat. It's different, because most of the time in a conference room scene, you would have everybody presented all at once. Like, you would have that overall establishing shot and see everybody who's sitting around the table.
Yes. In this case, it's kind of adult. It's more hilarious, because we just established that O'Brien really hates Cardassians in the previous scene. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there's this big dramatic reveal of, oh, O'Brien's in here with the Cardassians again. What could possibly go wrong?
Picard motions over and he goes, oh, now it's your turn to say something really nice about our guests, O'Brien. You better say something very nice.
They have nice hats.
Yes. Like, through his teeth, he's like, they don't smell as bad as I thought they would.
So, meeting over, O'Brien willingly hops in a turbo lift with two other Cardassians without... to have an excuse to catch the next one. And now, I love that the Cardassian engineer or whatever is like, so, O'Brien, I notice your transporter technology is more advanced than ours. Tell me how you do that.
Yeah. If you just have like a schematic or a pad with all the details, that'd be fine.
What about your security protocols? How do they work? Could you show me how to make a proton torpedo?
So
O'Brien, ever the politician, replies, I'll do what I'm told, but otherwise, fuck you. And the Cardassians do not react to this at all. They're like, huh, okay.
Well, they can respect that position.
Mm-mm. No, they wouldn't. It's too direct.
Yeah, it's not evasive enough, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, the makeup of this is really... Look how veiny they are. Ew.
Cardassians only understand triple entendres.
Can you imagine trying to flirt with a Cardassian?
Oh, my God. It'd be a nightmare.
There was an episode of Deep Space Nine about that.
Was it an offhand comment from Garrick?
No, it was centered around O'Brien.
Was he, like, being tortured somehow?
Well, you could say that, being that he was forced to work with the Cardassian.
Okay, so up on the bridge, Picard and the Gull are discussing, and the Gull's like, why don't you just tell my ships how to find it? We could do a lot quicker, we're closer to the zone, and there's more of us.
Which is valid, I mean, I don't know.
Picard's response is also valid, that, your dudes just start shooting as soon as they found them. That's not going to prevent war.
We need to deflate the situation, not pour gas on it. And I love the next part of this where Gull Duvet is like, so you won't help us find the ship. And Picard's all, no, I won't. And walks away.
No, I won't. And he smiles and walks away.
Uh-huh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Gull's kind of like, wait, I wanted a back and forth. I wanted a pithy argument. Damn it. I Can you imagine Kirk meeting Cardassians? Just be like, you can imagine the look of like, what the shit is this? As he looks at McCoy and Spock and then blows them up without a second thought. Oh, yes, Captain, I see that you may run into trouble in our sector. No, probably not. We'll probably just blow you up and keep going. What are you talking about?
You know, this is all far too interesting. Let's go check out on O'Brien's dinner.
Oh, thank God.
Ah, yes. And O'Brien's standing there wearing the Kiss Me, I'm Irish apron as he carries a big bowl of potatoes over to the table.
Oh, potatoes.
You know, say what you will about Keiko's meal. Yeah, at least it looked... It was presented well.
Whoa. What are you trying to say exactly? That a big pile of mashed potatoes with no seasonings or any sort of addition is somehow gross looking?
No, there's capers in there.
Gross. Who eats capers and potatoes?
the Irish.
Now, what I love about this is Keiko is so Japanese that she's never seen potatoes before. She's like, what the shit is this? Why isn't it green?
Did you dig this out of the ground?
I have never heard of such a thing as potatoes.
No, and you're right about the presentation, too, because it's like he walks over with just a big crock full of potato.
And then he just like liberally just spoons like a heaping glob of it on our plate. Which admittedly, that's very O'Brien.
Yes. It's also very school cafeteria.
That's very O'Brien.
Yes.
He's like a male version of a school lunch lady.
He needs the hairnet.
Well, except it's O'Brien. I'm surprised he didn't just, you know, beam it onto the plate.
Beam it into her stomach. See, wasn't that delicious? He's off by a little bit. Get some of it in her lungs.
I hate it when that happens. I know she hates it when you get in her lungs. Well, hold your breath.
And O'Brien's singing some terrible ass song about war and valor and killing people. I guess because he just wants to cheer himself up.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, on the bridge, Picard and Dukat's beard are looking at a big map of where the Phoenix is at and this little transport ship that it's about to blow the hell out of.
Ugh, man. Yeah, they're so purple veiny. Yeah, that little seam, that little ridge that goes like underneath your ball sack. Look at them. Ugh.
So, realizing the Enterprise can't make it there in time because they're only traveling at warp 4, there's no reason to hurry here, really.
Oh, no.
No, it's just, you know, innocent lives at stake.
Goldevay convinces Picard to just give me the code of the shield frequencies and I'll send my ship right over to investigate the situation. And Picard chews on the wood and his knuckles and sweats back and forth. Will I? Won't I? I don't know. Yes! Here you go! Here's the shield codes.
So, Riker goes, really? Okay.
Then, you know, Worf must protest. He's not a merry man.
So, the Cardassians send their closest ship over, which fires on the Phoenix, damage it very quickly because they could bypass the shields or whatever.
Of course, we have to think back to, you know, when Golduvet's ship fired on the Enterprise with no shields.
The Enterprise basically said, hey.
Stop that.
Cut that out.
That's mildly annoying.
And, you know, the Phoenix isn't quite as British as the Enterprise, and it responds by blowing the other ship completely out of the sky. Instantly killing 600 people. Awesome.
Well, Cardassian.
And how do you celebrate that? Why, with dessert! Let's kill another 50 people in this transport ship.
We need a good palate cleanser after that.
Get some licorice.
Ugh.
So, completely disgusted at the Cardassians' inefficiency, Picard turns to Data and says, how long will we be there at warp 4? 16 hours. Go to warp 9 now. At which point, I'm amazed that the Cardassian commander isn't furious. Like, you could have gone faster than this.
Right.
Why didn't you?
My assumption here is that, A, they were traveling at warp 4 because they were scanning space around them. And they couldn't go at full speed because they wouldn't be able to get a good enough image. And by the time they detected the Phoenix about to attack, going to warp 9 wouldn't have helped.
I think it's interesting, too, that Gul Duvet mentions, like, oh, those ships are no match for a Nebula class. I'm thinking, a Nebula class? Really? The little science ship that's like a kit
that
bash?
Blows up every time they show them?
Right, yeah. It's like, since when were Nebula classes, like, scary to anybody?
Well, Cardassians, though.
I mean, it's a saucer section with nacelles.
Yeah.
Well, it's the defenseless part of the Enterprise plus nacelles.
It's the defenseless part of the Enterprise plus the part that breaks the most.
Right. The things always get shot and then, become useless.
But man, that thing's got a spoiler on it.
Yeah.
It's the fastest ship in the fleet.
The USS Too Fast.
Well, that's probably will exist in the new movie, but whatever.
That's okay. When they get the movie Enterprise A or B or whatever they're up to now, they'll have a spoiler on that, too.
Oh, the Enterprise XXX, you mean? With Vin Diesel's captain?
You know, he's coming back.
You fuck yourselves. No.
Yes. They're doing XXX Return of Xander Cage.
Oh, his name is Xander Cage.
Yes. Spelled with an X.
Wait, that's only two X's.
He's going to invite you once again to get in that Xander zone.
Wait, are they both spelled with X's?
I don't know. They never spelled out the word zone in the movie.
Ah, the X-Zone. The X-Zone.
So, Picard goes down to visit O'Brien to have a little chat. So, O'Brien, what's the inside scoop of your former captain? How crazy is this son of a bitch?
Yeah, we're talking like Apocalypse Now or what?
Well, you know, Captain, it's the strangest thing. When the Cardassians murdered his wife and children in front of him, he didn't really react. I mean, he kept working and was always smiling, telling jokes. I mean, he's just such a strong individual, Captain.
He's so well-rounded and perfect. Nothing crazy about him or me.
Yeah, I admire the man, honestly.
I don't hate Cardassians at all. They're great.
Oh, that's the thing we forgot to mention when we were going over, you know, O'Brien's potato dinner. How, you know, after his explosion in the turbo lift and everything, he's saying to Keiko, you know, I got the feeling sitting in that meeting that there were people there who still hated the Cardassians. The part he left out was that he was the person who hated the Cardassians.
Right.
But still, I mean, there is some cognitive dissonance there.
Keiko's like, you're so insightful, you could be the ship's counselor.
Well, I mean, you have to give her a break. She is just a botanist. She's a person
talks to plants all day.
Yeah, she's a person who lives on a starship and takes care of the plants.
And then she eats them. The sick bitch. I mean, who works on like a pound and eats dogs? That's terrible.
I'm trying to think if it was ever established anywhere if Keiko's a vegetarian.
Dude, I think we can assume.
No, I mean, I'm saying it is, and it would make sense. I just don't remember if they ever actually, like, outright said it.
No.
I kind of assume they're all vegetarians, and all the meat they eat is just fake replicated proteins.
Well, no, it's not fake proteins, it's recycled proteins.
Mmm, the best kind.
But where would they get proteins from?
Oh, you know. Quarters. You know, here or there.
And they clean the socks.
Yep. Every time he puts his dirty laundry in, they get all the protein they need. Ha ha!
Oh.
Oh.
So, continuing to prove that O'Brien is not crazy at all, up in 10 forward, he decides, I'm going to have a drink with this Cardassian.
Because I love them. They're fine by me.
Well, this O'Brien personality thinks he loves them.
Yeah, I'm not really quite clear of what they were trying to do with O'Brien in this episode. Were they trying to make him deeper, or were they trying to just kind of unhinge him in general?
Well, one doesn't necessarily exclude the other.
Or was there no real goals to what this is going to do to O'Brien? I was like, let's just give Cole Meany something to do this episode. That'd be fun.
Well, that was probably the, you know, the basis of it.
His entire career in Star Trek has been that. It's like, oh, shit, Cole Meany. Run him apart. I mean, he's always the afterthought.
Send someone to beat him with a stick. It'll be fine.
So, he basically starts telling this Cardassian this story that Phoebe Cates would have related in Gremlins.
Wow. That's a hell of a reference.
It's just this pointlessly sad and depressing story about, you know, there were these people and I was with the children and women and grandparents and puppies and there's Cardassians there and I had to kill one and there was so much blood and I swallowed it all and I cried out tears of blood. But I don't hate you. I hate myself because of what you did to make me be who I am by killing you. And the Cardassian just stares at him like, what the fuck are you saying? And O'Brien leaves the scene. The Cardassian's like, okay, that was weird.
Yeah, the Cardassian literally says nothing this entire time. He just stares at him like, motherfucker,
you're
I just
insane.
Came here for a drink. I just came here for a drink, nigga. You know, come on.
You know, one thing I really like about this episode is how they have the three Cardassians on board, and at least two of them are not at all presented as being villainous in any way. They're very neutral. They might, you know, they're a little underhanded just because you don't exactly know what's going on with the Cardassians in general, but, like, the villains are the Starfleet characters.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, it's a really interesting and unexpected way to write an episode introducing an alien race. That's,
especially
like, the first...
Especially with this much prosthetics were obviously designed to look evil.
Oh, yeah.
When the first line establishing them talks about how, well, we've been at war with these people for a long time. No, trust us, we have. You know, there's all the setup there to make them just be a two-dimensional antagonistic presence, but that's not what they do with them. And for whatever other faults the episode has, it's really interesting to me that they wrote it that way.
True. I will agree to all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is a pretty good episode. I mean, there's nothing really crappy about this episode. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good episode. It's just more fun to talk shit about it.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it is flawed. I will not deny that at all, but they explore some really interesting things with it.
Well, yeah, because this is Star Trek. It's a morality play and a complicated thing where there's no clear right or wrong or good or evil, and then you explore the concept. I mean, this is Star Trek.
This is Star Trek.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is Star Trek.
Yeah, this is Star Trek.
No, I'm agreeing with you. This is Star Trek.
Right, this is Star Trek.
Oh, my God. I hate you both. Okay, so on the bridge... Worf storms in with generic Cardassian number 2 in arms, saying, I just caught this bastard trying to crack our computers open. And the Cardassian just throws his hands up and then goes like, who, me?
Yeah, what was his excuse? He was looking for the replicator or something?
No,
I'm trying
to
see how your computers worked.
Yeah, he was studying the interface system, not necessarily what was in the files. Because anybody would believe
that. If you touch
and
hold, it brings up a menu.
I guess they don't have Android in the Cardassian Empire.
No, he's on the bridge.
They're stuck using iOS, so everything's all awkward and confusing to use.
Yeah.
And so, interesting is Gold Duvet's reaction to him of like, uh-huh, you had no business doing that. Get back to the ship. I'll deal with you later.
Or, well, go back to quarters.
Well, yeah.
It gives him a lurid smile.
He doesn't scream and shout at him and honor, kill, murder.
Well, no, I mean, they're Cardassians. They're not going to put on a display for the aliens.
No, they're not.
They're going to handle their discipline privately and give him a nice public trial back on Cardassia.
Right, but at this point, we're still being introduced to the species, and so that's interesting
as
a first thing that they don't react like most aliens do publicly.
Right.
Well, and I like, too, that the reaction is Golduvet is not trying to, like, cover for him or get him excused for what he did.
At all.
He's totally owning up to, you did wrong, go back to your quarters and don't come out again.
Think about what you've done.
I am not having you be a problem for this mission.
So the Gold then speaks to the captain privately where he apologizes to him, which is also very un-alien. And that's the moment I first realized, no, this is not some rogue agent. This was all set up to make the Gold look sympathetic to the captain.
You're right.
This is a total basic Cardassian ploy. Set someone up to look bad so you look better.
Look at Picard's face. Is he trying to swallow this bullshit, too?
You know, I never actually thought about it that way, but it makes perfect sense.
If anybody understands Cardassians, it's Hey Mickey.
Alright. Where the fuck were we?
The ready room.
Oh, yeah, with the doll. So
the Gull stares at the ugly-ass Lisa Frank painting of the Enterprise for a while. It's like he's wondering, God, that is ugly. Why would you hang that?
You know,
paint this for you?
Is this Thomas Kincaid? Master,
you know,
light my ass.
If I was directing this episode, I think I would have had Golduvet staring at the fish. Because that's got to be a much more interesting thing for a visiting alien to see in the ready room.
Yeah. I just realized that the Cardassian armor has sequins on it.
Uh-huh.
Didn't really notice that before.
Still think it looks badass?
Brown sequins, y'all. Mmm.
You're going to be sensibly fabulous.
Yeah, you know, it would be kind of understated in your fabulousness.
Honestly, I really like the Deep Space Nine revision of the Cardassian uniform much, much better.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. Yeah, right. I think we're all in agreement.
So after the commercial break, the Enterprise is caught up to the Phoenix, and they beam aboard Captain Charisma. Will Riker. Loves what you do with the Borg. There's my man O'Brien. This dude is awesome. I would lick the shit off his taint.
Wait, was that you speaking as the character? Or?
As the character, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I just checking.
And then he makes some culturally insensitive comment to O'Brien and excuses himself.
And he winks at O'Brien, too, before he leaves, like, I'll fuck you later.
Yeah. And then O'Brien smiles like an embarrassed schoolgirl. Oh, he noticed me. Senpai noticed me.
Intro quote.
Yes. So, Riker escorts Captain Charisma up to Picard. And Picard's like, nice to meet you. Sit down, let's talk.
God, O'Brien is really about to jump in this guy's lap, isn't he?
So Captain Charisma is immediately, you think I'm crazy, don't you? Picard's like, shit, yes.
Crazier than a shithouse rat.
Oh, no, I'm not crazy. You just killed 700 people.
Oh, Cardassians.
But they were Cardassians.
Yeah, I thought you said people.
So Captain Charisma basically is just all, look if I told you that everything I was doing was because the Cardassians are up to something. Card's like,
okay,
like,
where's your proof?
Proof? It's like, well, no, Picard, I know it. I can feel it in the wind.
Yeah, of course, Picard, too, is like, Cardassians, up to something? Clutch the pearls! Oh, my.
I just know it. I can feel it in my bones, or up to something. You see Picard slowly reaching underneath his table and pressing the hidden button underneath it over and over and over again.
There's a light blinking near Worf who's ignoring it.
Ignore my advice, will you?
I'll wait till I hear some screaming, then I'll come in and save you.
So Charisma turns around and also stares at the ugly Lisa Frank painting for a while.
It's pretty goddamn hypnotic.
Scott, I think the word you're looking for is hideous.
That's yeah, I may have mispronounced
hypnotic?
That.
Hypnotious?
Hypnotious, I like it.
Ooh, it's like a gay Greek porn villain.
Hypnotious does sound like a 66 Batman villain.
It does.
Because I'm naughty.
Lord Hypnotious.
Yes.
So when it becomes evident that Captain Picard is not going to side with them in his murderous crusade against all Cardassians, Captain Charisma basically responds, "It smells musty in here.
Like a bureaucrat's office.
Like old people in diapers and bed sores and baldness.
Like an old, smells like an old snatch in here. Like a grandma's queef. You disgust me, Picard."
And Picard's response is basically, "Well, it doesn't smell like crazy." So here's the deal. You can either fly back with us, or we'll lock you up and tow your ship. Them's the apples. What you gonna do?
Of course, it would have been really funny at this point if, like, the number one on the Nebula class just pulled a rocket maneuver and rammed into him.
Yeah, but it's a Nebula class. It would probably blow up on impact. They're kind of the Pintos of the Starfleet.
You know, you have to wonder, too. Like, I understand for the purposes of time and the narrative structure, basically. Like, yeah, you have to focus on the captain's part in the Phoenix's actions. But, like, how complicit was his bridge crew in this? Because at any time, any one of them could have just stepped up and been like, "Dude, you are off your shit. Go downstairs. I'm taking over."
I think we're supposed to infer that from the way O'Brien treats him, if I, this dude's awesome, I would die for him and his children.
Probably
the
so, but
like that.
But again, at that point, like, the bridge crew is complicit, and, you know, there's more than just one person that needs to be addressed here. Like,
wait, is this just a redress of the Hunt for Red October?
Maybe.
Huh.
Well, no,
that was 93, The Hunt for Red October.
Well, it was the book before that, though.
Oh, it was, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, Michael Crichton, too, right?
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Basically, what I'm saying, though, is that, like, towing it home does make sense, because I don't think you should turn it over to the bridge crew who may have been just as involved in this. But then again, later on, they turn it over to the first officer and just trust everything's going to be okay. Like, yeah. It just seems like the level of responsibility for this probably ought to be a little bit greater than what they're presenting, even though I get that for what they had to work with, this is how it had to go.
Yeah. Right. What I do like, too, is that this is Picard versus another captain, something of his level. Not an underling, not someone superior to him, but someone that's, like, on his level.
It's almost is this like after Roddenberry died?
I don't think so, no.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think Roddenberry died early the next year?
Because it seems like something he would not have liked.
Okay, they had the memorial message for Roddenberry with Unification, which was season 5.
Okay.
And I assume they would have put that in pretty close after when he died. However, his health may have been poor enough that he was not very involved at this point.
Ah, that's a fair point. Because I seem to recall he didn't like Starfleet fighting Starfleet in general.
Well, no, because he had his whole idealistic vision of the future where all humans would get along with each other perfectly and there would be no need for internal conflict. Which, admittedly, is really boring when you get, you know...
It's a wonderful idea, but it makes for terrible television.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, no, it was the cool thing is you take that idea and you expand it out so people aren't fighting over resources. You're fighting over ideals, which is far more interesting, which is what's happening now.
Well, true, but I think Roddenberry's whole concept was all humans share the same ideals by that point.
Right.
That's why it's a utopia.
The best ideals.
Yes.
Yeah. Homogeneous.
Of course, I like the way Deep Space Nine went with that, and, like, basically, yeah, that's totally true on Earth. But there's all these other humans living all the way out in the galaxy, and things aren't as good for them.
Well, like the Maquis, you know, I mean, my goodness. I mean, they have every right to be pissed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines from like, the Maquis, and speaking of that, is Maquis are talking to some Starfleet officer. I don't even remember what the situation was, but they're like, oh, yeah, it's great you're sitting in your uniforms in your nice ship. It's easy to be angels when you're in heaven. And I always liked that line. That was a really good line.
Yeah, they should just get all their weapons together and go take over, like, a Starfleet base out in the middle of nowhere.
Like a wildlife protest. Refuge?
Yeah, wildlife refuge.
Yeah. Yeah, don't
totally
seem trying
sympathetic.
To take over... Yes. Don't seem trying to take over an ATF building. Topical.
Well, the last time a group of people tried to fight the ATF, they kind of got burned to the ground.
Right, which is why they don't do it anymore, why they're picking on a bunch of hippie wildlife reserve people.
Well, while we've been talking, the Phoenix has made a sudden sharp turn to starboard.
Oh, very good.
Because they detected another Cardassian cargo vessel, and we have to kill it right now.
I love the camera that when Picard's talking to the other captain, like, the other captain looks so fucking crazy because he's, like, really close to the camera and at this weird angle, and there's, like, this red light in his face, so it makes him look crazy as
right,
hell.
Right, right. Like, the primary lighting's coming from behind him, and they are shining a red light into his face.
I know, he looks so crazy.
Yeah.
And did I see anybody else on the bridge in that scene?
That's not the bridge. That is the captain's office.
Oh, okay.
As he's not special lit with only red lights. They amp him up for battle.
Yeah.
They keep him warm, like French fries.
When they get closer to enemy vessels, some techno music starts playing.
So they pull up the expert witness of O'Brien up to the bridge because he's going to help.
Well, no, they need someone on the bridge they can talk to who has the mindset of what would someone who's obsessed with murdering every Cardassian do in this situation? O'Brien?
Those are Protestants, not Cardassians. Easy mistake to make, guys. Easy mistake. Oh, that joke.
But what it boils down to is that the Phoenix is going to blow up this Cardassian ship. And they don't want to back down. So Picard says, okay, well, if you do that, we'll blow you up. Which Captain Charisma says, okay, well, fine then. I'm going to blow them up for sure then.
Yeah.
So there's sort of a stalemate. Then O'Brien pipes up. What if I just went over there and talked to him and talked him down? Because he'll listen to me because I'm his best friend. We used to fuck.
Picard's like, talking never solves anything.
So, and Picard's like, that sounds great, but they've got their shields up. And O'Brien's like, that's okay. I know how to sneak in through a plot hole in their shields.
I like O'Brien's optimism here, though. Like, yes, there is a 50th of a second where their shields are not protecting them from transporters.
I can just shoot right on through this impasse in the story.
Uh-huh.
So was O'Brien the engineer on that ship?
Tactical officer.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Tactical officer on a different ship, actually.
Yeah. Why was he a tactical officer? How do you go from tactical to engineering?
Ah, here's how you do that. You were a tactical officer, but then you got tired of killing. You went, I want a non-combat role now.
Yeah, I want to fix ship.
There will never be any stress. How about I just work transportation?
This is also something that was talked about in, I think, the second season of Deep Space Nine, where... Okay, so O'Brien was the tactical officer on the Rutledge, and that was around the time of the Setlek 3 massacre that they keep mentioning. And something around that time in Deep Space Nine, O'Brien is telling Sisko, like, he never knew he had a knack for engineering until a situation came up where he had 10 minutes before a line of Cardassians was going to be on them to get a field transporter working to evacuate him and the people he was with. And, like, he didn't know anything about engineering then, and somehow in 9 minutes and some seconds, you know, just in the nick of time, he got the transporter working and got everybody out. And he said, that's when I got the gold uniform. So presumably he was, you know, like how Worf was in the first season, red uniform, but he was at tactical sometimes when necessary.
Yeah.
And then when he showed an aptitude for engineering, he got transferred to the engineering division.
Unless back then they were still in the old uniforms? Of the movie uniforms?
Well, the movie uniforms they would have had then were all red.
Hmm.
Maybe it could have been like a direct gold uniform, but like, you know, a spiritual gold uniform.
Well, I'm thinking more like a gold lame. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, man, that would be amazing.
In any case, like, ooh, subsequent O'Brien stories did kind of establish his move from one job role to the other.
Let's just take a moment and imagine Prince in Starfleet. He's got the only purple uniform in Starfleet.
Yeah, it'd be Prince, and then Samuel L. Jackson would be fighting over the one purple uniform. Because Samuel, he likes his purple stuff, too.
Samuel Jackson would have the captain uniform, like Picard, the jacket, except it'd be leather. And he'd have his hat.
That'd be so fucking awesome. I want to watch that episode. I want to watch the episode where Samuel Jackson is captain.
Man, you know, that's what Picard's smoking jacket is really missing. A beret.
A beret.
Like, can you just envision him sitting in his ready room on his couch, reading his book, reclined back with his leather jacket or his suede jacket and his beret.
And a cigarette on the end of a cigarette holder.
And a giant coffee cup off to his side.
Maybe some croissants?
Yes, croissants.
And a mime in the background.
Well, that's what the fish is for.
It's a mime fish?
A bunch of wine and cheese. Some Great. Germans waltzing into his apartment.
And then for some reason, someone just rides by on a bicycle.
Oh, God.
You know, I can go for some cheese right now.
Oh, we got plenty of that.
From a can or like from like a jar?
I was thinking from a bag.
Bag cheese? Gross. All the good cheese is coming out of aerosol cans. Anyway, O'Brien is teleported over to Captain's crazy room.
Captain's crazy room?
Yeah, the red lights and the disco sirens. Whoop, whoop.
No, but I'll tell you what, I actually kind of like Maxwell's office. There's just something about it that works for me.
Having the Thomas Kincaid painting, he does have like a game of Pac-Man going on in the background, which is kind of nice.
And I like his desk has a granite surface instead of the polished black glass.
That's true, because when the inertial damper is running out, you want that thing floating around the room.
And you got the leather couch up, you know, on the side.
Granite countertops are so in it, that decade.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, by the Sovereign class, you know, they're very tacky. You know, you had to get them redone.
So, O'Brien basically says, oh, by the way, you lose. Let's sing. Sing that song I like so much. Row, row, row. Not that song.
No, the one you sang to me to get me to fall asleep at night.
You know, that song that the other kid who got killed by the Cardassians liked. The cheerful one.
What was his name? Stumpy?
Well, it was when they were done with him.
And your crew loved this guy?
Well, I don't know, but I've been told Cardassian pussy's mighty cold.
So, situation resolved. O'Brien is giving his report to the captain and the gull at the same time, because, sure.
Transparency, you know.
Time saving.
So Barnes was like, you know what? What that captain did was wrong. I know that now. But, just now?
Yeah, wait.
You were cool with him killing 700 people unprovoked until just now.
Right, I didn't know this was a conflict.
But you know what? He's still the best damn captain I ever served under.
Present captain included.
Aww.
It's like O'Brien's basically saying, you know, I know what Hitler did was wrong, but he's still the best captain I ever served under.
Yeah, he was damn good at it, you know?
If killing Cardassians is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Well, that's most of O'Brien's character in Deep Space Nine, to be fair.
That and getting shit on.
Yeah.
He needs like a cigar. He needs like a stubby cigar that he can chomp on while he's talking about this stuff.
Oh, so you want him to be Nick Fury?
Yeah, pretty much. Except not nearly as cool.
I was thinking Arnold.
Yeah, more like Arnold. That same level of camp.
No, I was thinking Hasselhoff's Nick Fury, so...
Oh, God.
I think our camp qualification is satisfied there.
And maybe some Lundgren Punisher.
Yeah, I need a camp counselor now. Ugh.
No. No.
You need some camp candy?
That was a funny
one. Now I'm sad because John Candy's dead. Thanks, XV.
And how about that Louis Anderson?
Is he dead?
No, but his career is.
Ah, damn. I got hopeful for a second.
Oh, don't worry. The Type 2 will get him soon.
For every pound that Drew Carey shed, Louis Anderson gained 2.
It's like an odd version of Hydra.
The fat Hydra.
The Hydrox. They're not Oreos, but I don't care. Mom, mom,
twist off one cookie, 2 more creams will show up in its place.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Can I get this?
I'm sure between Hey Mickey and us both, we can give you 2 creams. I'm sure it can happen.
Oh, yeah. Right in the chocolate cookie.
Oh, God. Oh, I feel dirty.
Well, as long as you don't mind getting to the Tootsie Roll Center or the Tootsie Pop.
Want to see how many licks it takes?
3.
3.
Okay, so in the epilogue here, Picard is basically saying, yeah, I know what you're up to. And the girl's like, who, us?
The lone me?
Well, first, though, the girl is all like, you know, it's nice that humans can feel loyalty like that, but man, he's up the wrong tree. And I like Picard's thing, too, in response to that. It's like, you know, Maxwell was pretty awesome during the war, and it's really sad that he could not find a life for himself in peace. But we're not going to just throw him out because of that.
Well, yeah, he's still part of the Federation. I mean, don't, like, throw him to the enemy. I mean, my God.
Yeah, we don't want to punish criminals when they do something unforgivable. It's okay. You killed people before, then it was all right.
Uh-huh.
So how many people did he kill just in this episode? There was 600 on one ship and 700 on another.
Well, we didn't ever find out how many people were on the space station he blew up.
Ah.
But between the two ships he shot down in this episode, it was about 700.
This episode's got a high body count. It's like almost in RoboCop levels.
Yeah, almost. Although I don't think they had a guy melt.
So...
So okay, so...
Yeah.
The girl's like, well, you know, why don't you go investigate the ship? Of course, like, 'cause I knew what I'd find there, and then we'd have to go to war. And my job was to prevent war.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, get off my ship.
This is the part where this episode just went to maximum overdrive. This was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Yes, they were transporting war weapons. Yes, they were trying to start war. Yes, they're doing all these stuff they shouldn't be doing. But Picard's like, I don't care. I'm here to prevent this shit. And he just turns around stone cold.
Well, it's like, tell your leaders, we are watching you.
Yeah. Now I have a reason to be racist against Cardassians, and I'm going to assume that all Cardassians are going to be tricksy people like you are, which will be carried through for the next 15 years of our series.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and where this ends comes back around to what I was saying before, like, yeah, the Cardassians went through a war with the Federation, came out of it weaker, but at this point when we're actually meeting them, they're starting to gear themselves up again. So in a couple of years, when they come back with their ships and are actually a threat, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, the Cardassians are like, well, now we know what we're dealing with. We got to step it up.
Uh-huh. Build more guns.
Yes, ones that can penetrate a naked hull. That would
listen,
be nice.
Listen, guys, these super focused flashlights you're putting on the ships are not cutting it.
Lasers. Captain, they're shooting lasers at us. Lasers? They shot a missile at us.
It'll be here in about 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah, and it's going to be coasting here from inertia because the fuel ran out about 10 minutes ago.
Captain, the ship has a trebuchet mounted on top of it.
Oh my god, it's a Spelljammer campaign.
The photon trebuchet.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. All right, I cast fireball into delayed blast fireball into the trebuchet, then we fire it at the enemy ship.
Then you have a 5-minute conversation over whether, wait, will fireball work in space?
Right, doesn't it need oxygen to burn, or does it just blow up? I don't know. Let's look at the rules. Well, fuck, I don't know. Where's the Mountain Dew?
I'm drinking some right now, actually.
I'm shocked. Shocked!
What flavor?
Code Red.
But did you take the toll road to buy it?
No.
Is that slang for something? Because it sounds like it. So I met this girl last night and I took the toll road with her.
That's slang for an old pointless argument that JD and Fort Max had about what road to take to get to Tulsa.
To Tulsa, Oklahoma?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was like a 15-minute conversation about the value of taking this one toll road over another road. The toll road is faster, but the other road was fine.
See, the other thing is, this is a trick question because there's no reason to ever go to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Well, I think that was a point we raised at the time.
Yeah.
But Fort Max's family is in Tulsa.
Well, they can leave Tulsa.
That's
and
not
come
a reason to go
Max.
To Tulsa.
Right.
Ah, well, see, the thing is, like, Fort Max has to go to Tulsa to see them, but if they came to see Fort Max, they'd have to go to Texas.
Oh, yeah, safer to go to Tulsa.
So, like, there's no winning on either side of that.
No, it's, yeah. I understand.
I say this, but the weekend I spent in Dallas was actually kind of fun. Nice city.
Well, yeah, you spend, like, your time in an actual city, it's okay. Dallas, yeah. And Houston, Austin, those are actually pretty okay cities, but anything outside of that? No. No. Now, if you happen to make it up to Amarillo for a steak, that's fine too. But you don't live there.
Casque of Amarillo. A casque of Amarillo.
Ah.
It's like the Mexican version of a Poe story.
Casque of Yellow. I don't know. What? Okay.
So Scott.
Ah. What?
Generally, you have your fiancé watch these episodes with you. Did you do so with this Next Generation episode?
No, I did not.
Why?
Because it was good?
Yeah, I didn't want her to get the wrong idea about Star Trek.
Well, that's a shame.
She'll definitely like the original series episode we're going to watch.
No. Yeah, we're going to make her watch the original series. That's not a problem.
You should make her watch Deep Space Nine next week, too.
I don't know. Is it a good episode?
The Magnificent Ferengi.
Yeah, I'll make her watch that one. She'll hate that. She will absolutely hate that.
That's such a good, bad episode.
You should make her watch Little Green Men as well.
Because we probably won't do that one for the podcast because it's too obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
That in the Tribbles episode.
Which yeah, we're was not very good.
Either. God. We can't do anything that anybody's ever going to want to talk about.
Right.
Well, nothing anybody's going to want to talk about for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Planet Africa, people want to talk about that for all the wrong reasons. And that's okay.
No, nobody wants to talk about Planet Africa. Nobody even wants to watch it or even acknowledge it existed.
I do.
Well, we're not most people.
You know what? I have to admit something. The Planet Africa episode, after I listened to you guys' podcast about that episode, that's when I decided I wanted to be on this podcast. I am not kidding. That was the one that was like, oh, I have got to be a part of this.
Now, was that before or after Mickey started asking you for advice on Enterprise episodes?
That was way before.
Yeah, way before.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I told you about it like right when it posted because I was so proud of that episode.
That was one of our finer hours of podcasting, I will admit.
Yeah, after listening to that, I was like, oh yeah, this needs to be talked about.
I still love that we started Toss with like the worst episode ever.
We did that on purpose.
I know. I love that.
Like, we sat around thinking, what's the worst thing we can do for our first episode? Well, obviously.
God, it was so bad. Oh. Just embarrassing. I mean,
yes!
Things like you're watching TV and you're like an embarrassing moment comes on and you get uncomfortable in real life.
Uh-huh.
Whole episode's that way.
Uh-huh. It's great.
Oh. Set phasers to squirm.
Set phasers to cringe.
Yeah, even better. The for cringy. No, that didn't work at all. Let's see. All right, so what are we doing next?
The Magnificent Ferengi.
Okay.
Because Deep Space Nine week.
All right.
Following up with the original series, Whom Gods Destroy.
Oh, badass.
Is that the one with Captain Garth?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, Lord Garth?
I think so. Here's the trailer for it.
Oh. Fancy.
Faster if I just look up the episode title.
Trailer.
It's an Insane Asylum episode.
Yeah, I think that's Lord Garth.
Oh, yeah. That is one hot blue woman.
She's green? She's Orion?
Uh-huh. That's Batgirl.
Oh, it is green. Okay, man. Boy, that film was just... Okay. Color correction is not great.
Yeah, I watched the first 2 minutes of the Memphis episode, and it was amazing. The acting going on it is just stunning. And the dialogue is good. It's going to be fun.
Special effects look on par. They look on fleek.